from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, child and family psychotherapist, Deborah Padmini Bergman.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, the Joseph Peck Group. I am Mark Lejeune, and now your host, the MC, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I can't believe the show is happening. I mean, I can believe the show is happening. Let me explain that. Years ago, when we started the Life Changes Show, we knew Padmini. Padmini, our guest, Deborah Padmini Bergman, it was a major, she still could be, a major TV producer and films. And she was so excited about us starting the Life Changes Show and giving us advice and all that. And here, what, 9.5 years later, as we were doing the countdown to live, she's given me the director thing, like, and you're on. And I'm like, yeah, that's so appropriate. Talk about life changes. And she's on, finally, after all these years. And we're going to be talking about soulful foster care and adoptions. And you'll see why Deborah Padmini Bergman is our guest to talk about that, if you haven't already seen it on our website. I feel strongly that this is a conversation for everybody. And we need to have this conversation more, and we need to have it with each other and more people. I got to thinking, we know more about how to adopt a dog or a cat than a child. We know more about the needs of a dog that's being adopted. And I feel horrible making that comparison. And sure, more people might be able to adopt a dog or a cat. But we seem to teach more, talk more about how important it is for the animal this and for the animal that. And what about the children? I've heard, and we'll talk about, some staggering numbers of children that need help. And I feel that if we had more of this conversation amongst ourselves, more people not only would be aware, but they'd be able to help and support. I grew up with a dear friend who had been adopted, and this is a fine example of being able to have this conversation where even as children, we know what that might mean. And I'll give an example. One of our friend's children found out the hard way by some not very nice people that she had been adopted. And we didn't know how to react or support her as friends and as children. And I'm thinking, we maybe could have known. I still don't know. And another friend, and both of them in so much better situations than they would have been. But still, how this is approached and how other people talk about it with them, I didn't know as a kid, and I don't know that I know as an adult. And in the past few years, and maybe this is one of the reasons why Deborah Padmini Bergman is here, because maybe her and I could write a book, because I've had years of thinking that I could write a children's book, and the children's book could say something like, children come into our lives in many ways, and some come in this way, and some come in that way, some come through foster care, some come through adoption, and all children are special and all of that. And potentially, the children could read that, and every child could read that and support each other as they learn and they say, oh, you came that way, I came this way. And then maybe it's not as traumatic for everybody. I'm so looking forward to this conversation and to our musical guest, Joseph Peck, live here on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark Lejeune.
I love what you shared and how important that is, because if we can get away from the labels and the comparisons and honor where each other is and learn how to do that right out of the gate. Because I was thinking about, as much as we were focusing in these topics, how we just went, I just went through a situation with a friend whose parents are struggling, and so he's now going to be raised by other parts of his family. So that's not technically foster, but it's a similar type of a situation where he's displaced into something other than his parents. It's just such a giant topic.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of giant topics, Deborah Padmini's Bergman's resume is a giant topic. She has done so many different things. We're going to talk a little bit about many of them, but mainly about the fact she's a child and family psychotherapist. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's a certified dyadic development psychotherapy therapist. And gosh, so much more. I am so proud of her. Welcome, Deborah Padmini Bergman, to the show.
Hi, Filippo. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm so excited to be here because this is a topic that I live and breathe personally and professionally. And already you and Mark have touched on so many topics around the issues of adoption and foster care, the stigma that children and families experience. Based on that it's somehow not quite as good as being a part of a biological family. And Mark touching on there are all kinds of adoptive and foster care families, like you talked about a relative care environment, kinship, which often then sends the family tree out of alignment in ways that has impact. So there's so many nuances around the experience of foster care and adoption because it's so unique to each child, youth, family, and whether we're talking about an adoption that's happening through our county departments of child and family services, or, you know, there is a lot of glitter and glamour around international adoptions that also have their own issues and themes around them.
Yeah, which you shared a little bit in our phone conversations and before the show. This is such a big topic. And, you know, I have to say, I don't know if you noticed, but there was a moment when we were talking before the show and I stopped writing and I just looked at you and smiled. Did you notice that?
Yes.
I thought
I had talked too much.
No, what it was, on the contrary, what it was I've known you so long. And of course, when I knew you, you were doing, what was it, like the Swan? And I mean, what were you doing? Reconstructive surgery shows? What was all these?
No, I had worked on some reality TV shows, which are still a big hit. Extreme Makeover.
Yeah.
Which is a network show, and Wife Swap,
right.
And that's where my career had kind of ebbed its way into, and it was part of the impetus and catharsis to kind of switch careers.
I bet you there were a lot of stories that led to some of those characters, and if you look at the backgrounds.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the reasons she was so excited about our show. It's like a reality show that's going to be real about things that we really need to talk about, and here you are.
Yes, and also, you know, Mark introduced you as a master of change, and as a psychotherapist, I am a change agent.
Absolutely.
And that's how we look at our work, as opposed to, you know, different fields like being in the medical field or being in the business field or being in the entertainment. We are change agents. Our work is to help people transform through insight and tools and working through their traumas and their grief and a whole slew of other tools.
And that's exactly why I was smiling. I just sat there and smiled at you, and I thought, she has changed so much. And I thought, what a perfect place for her to be, because she gets to use her smart and her heart. And I wrote that down while I was looking at you. And I never put those two words together. So so there it is. So thank you for that. And thank you for what you're doing. So not only are you steeped in this culture, you know so much about it, you've the studies and the degrees and certifications and all of that, but you became an adoptive mother. So could you talk us through that process for you?
Well, for me, I think my whole life I always had this thought, even as a young woman, a teenager even, that I would have a family and I would adopt a child and I would have a biological child. And as I focused on my career and life went on and I was married and then not married, I didn't have a biological child, but that urge to become a mother was still there, and that desire. And I always held this belief that there was a level of maturity and growth that I would never go through without becoming a parent, where I was really putting someone else's needs before my own, where I was caring for someone else. And, you know, with so many children, especially here in Southern California, we have the largest foster care system in the country. We have over 20,000, I think it's like 23,000 or more children who are in our system who need homes, and we don't have an orphanage system anymore. We believe in in-home care for kids to be in a family environment. However, we have maybe 8,000 slots, beds. It's not even just homes.
Places for them. Which are not even great places per se.
Well,
some of them.
Many, hopefully, yes. Hopefully that are, you know, are the agencies and my colleagues who, you know, do the home studies and help train the families are working with really good families. The problem is what do we do with the other 12,000?
Wow.
Where do they go?
Wow.
You know, and we're talking round numbers here. I'm not giving you exact numbers, but the exact numbers do exist. But we know we're in that ballpark. And so
it's staggering.
It is staggering. So it means you have a lot of children growing up in institutionally. And now our system, as of January 2000, I think it was 17 or 18, where we our foster care system is changing, the process by which you can become a resource parent, how that works, how children get matched into your home. That whole system is starting to change, too. We've started to, we had a lot of kids who were growing up in residential treatment facilities or group homes, and that is not possible anymore. The funding's not there, that the county, the taxpayers would like to see children in homes, but we don't have the homes. So it's a conundrum. And so we're always looking and recruiting and looking for families to be. We need just foster parents because kids, permanency, our goal is for permanency for all children. And that could be reunification with their birth family, which if it's safe, is preferable. And if not that, then legal guardianship or adoption. And so we need people with big hearts, with lots of empathy, with a lot of emotional intelligence to be able to take care of these children while their parents or families or other parts of their birth families are getting the help that they need to be able to parent these children safely. Or we need families that are willing to build their families with other people's children and with children who are in need of homes. There's so many great kids out there.
Wow. When we come back, I'd like to talk about attachment. That was something that I when you started to share with me, I thought, how could I not know this and how important this is. And so I'd like to know more. I think more of us need to know more. And you have also a phrase that you say or that you use. Is it therapy with a soul or something like that?
Therapy for the soul.
Therapy for the soul. Wow. Okay. So definitely want to talk about that when we come back with our guest, Deborah Padmini Bergman, and then a little later on, live music in the studio with our musical guest, Joseph Peck, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
Hey guys, this is Michaela. So I'm here to tell you about the DNA Institute. If you haven't heard of it already, I wanted to let you in on it because it completely changed my life. A few years ago, I was 30 pounds overweight. I wanted a career, good friends, a loving family, and financial success, and I didn't have any of it, so I ate. Within 6 months, the DNA Institute treatment not only helped me lose the 30 pounds, it also rebalanced my hormones, healed my metabolic and digestive system, and made my higher functioning brain so loud it became impossible to overeat when I was full. Don't we all want that? So many of my friends and family turned to the Institute after they saw my success. All of them lost their desired weight, ranging from 8 to 60 pounds. I found this to be so different than anything I'd ever tried before, and it was easier than anything I'd ever done. It's not a supplement or a diet pill. It's a genuine, doctor-prescribed, custom medical treatment made just for you. It doesn't matter what your situation is or how much weight you have to lose. I believe the Institute will get you to your goal. My experience is that this is more than just a weight loss system. It's a biohack to a better way of looking, feeling, and living. When I started, I had never heard of the DNA Institute, but the fact that they've been in Beverly Hills since 1982 gave me a real peace of mind. Now that you've heard of them, click on the DNA ad at lifechangesshow.com and get your customized formula started today. Change your life like I changed mine.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Deborah Padmini Bergman. And I'm going to call you Padmini from now on.
Thank you. I was waiting for that.
and you know what was really special? Now, I've met your son before, actually a couple times at least. But when he came in, I thought it was special that he felt the need to, like, in a sense, introduce you and say, you know how great my mom is. I have a great mom. And I thought, wow. And you two have been together how long?
5 years, September 29th, 2018 will be 5 years.
Wow. Okay. And actually 5 years is an important number for some, right? Is that like how things...
Well, I think there's a lot of information that those of us who work in the field of adoption in mental health or even just in all the support services, as we look at the struggles that children have to make new attachments to new primary caregivers after, you know, many traumas and breaks and disruptions with other ones, that we say under the best of circumstances, it takes about 5 years to develop a secure attachment.
Wow, wow. You know, I've known you all this time, and you've changed so much. This process, I know, has not been the most easy process in the world. On the contrary, however, you seem to have grown as a person in such a beautiful way.
Thank you. That's such a sweet thing to say. You know, it's so funny. This has been the best, most profound experience of my life, parenting this child. It's been the most challenging and hardest thing I've ever done. And I've done a lot of hard things. I've had a lot of challenges and a lot of risks and been through a lot of things, and parenting a child who's had a lot of adverse childhood experiences and how that manifests for them into deep feelings of rage and pain and how that impacts their development and creates different lagging skills that they might go, that they might have, makes it a hard process. And I feel like I've been taken down to my knees. I've had great joy. I've had depression. But I think that it's so evolutionary to be able to parent someone else's child, to hold someone through their pain and the way that that manifests for them, especially children with really challenging behaviors and all the support they need. Like, our kids have special needs. And I think that you have to grow and transform. You have to keep increasing your ability to hold empathy when you feel traumatized or attacked, or to be able to stay patient, to increase your own window of tolerance, increase your problem solving, to be ever flexible and adaptable, and to hold center. Like E. Cummings talks about as a poem, that place. Like, that's what I, you know, as a yoga instructor too, like, that's what I think about, is that when I'm holding grace, I'm holding center, that's when I'm most in my emotional intelligence. And to be able to hold that space with a lot of negative energy, possibly violence going on around you, is super challenging. And you don't always succeed. I've failed so many times. So I feel like I don't believe that love is unconditional. I believe commitment is. And my commitment to my child, like, I am committed to my child. And I love him deeply. And that, like, adoption, especially with a child who you didn't nurture in your own tummy, and then you didn't nurture as an infant. My child moved in when he was 5 years old. God, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Actually, I remember that, and I remember a beautiful party that you had when that was all finalized. And I also remember you saying something, Filippo, I'd love to see you, but it has to be at a soccer game, or... Right? Like, everything has changed.
Yeah. He's got my mind, my heart, and my wallet. He's got it all.
You know what's interesting too is I've had the pleasure of taking some classes from you when you were doing yoga, and then you said something interesting too. Like, this is like so deep to me that you as a, what is it, yogini or whatever the word is, have become much more spiritual, or much more expanded, or much more able to work through stuff that just from the yoga practice you weren't able to get to here, from where you are now to where you are now.
That's an interesting observation, because it's so funny, because I feel like parenting makes you so present. You have to be in the present. But I feel like you're also, especially with a child who has special needs, which my child does, I'm always on alert too. So that ability to relax, to go into that sweet, calm, quiet, serene, tranquil place feels harder to get to. And feels like it's hard to be there when you're always in a kind of a state of alert based on your child's needs, juggling everything that you need to juggle for two lives. I'm a single working parent, so I don't have anyone to tap out with. I work in community mental health. So it's not like there's big bucks to bring in lots of support. I don't have family that lives in the state. I have a cousin who helps out, but she lives near the airport. So I've built my network within my friends to support each other, but still, it doesn't leave a lot of room to be in that contemplative space.
Wow. I listen to you and I think, okay, so this is from the parent perspective, and a parent who also has so much knowledge in this area. And I think, oh my gosh, for those of us who don't know how to do half of this stuff, I was going to say, you know, who could be a good candidate? But before we get into that, can we talk about the attachment thing? What is that? To me, that felt like it was only like I'm attached to my mom or my dad. But it's not that. They're attached to their world and their culture. And I it goes beyond what I was thinking.
Well, in terms of, you know, my reference to attachment is everyone has a different style of attachment based on how they were raised in their relationship with their primary caregivers, which creates an attachment style that we carry on and replicate in our ongoing relationships, whether that's work, a mate, children, friends. It's all our relationships. So kids who are born into a family or are in families where they have an experience of being enjoyed, where it's been safe, they've had safety, their needs have been met, they're stable, they're structured, they're affectionate, they're loving, it's attuned. Those children end up having skills to be able to replicate those kind of relationships with other people. And children who have experienced, you know, let's say a primary caregiver who met some of their needs but not all of their needs may end up with an anxious style of attachment or an ambivalent kind of attachment. Maybe someone who can't tolerate the emotion stays more kind of in their thinking brain and intellectual. Others that are overly emotional and can't regulate their emotions. And then our children with the most severe traumas often end up with what we call a disorganized attachment, where, you know, they might have dissociation, are really unable to integrate the different parts of their brain and to form relationships for the rest of their lives. So
wow.
I think it's about trust and attunement and connection. And, you know, we are damaged in relationship, and we're social creatures, and our brains are social, are organized to be social, and so we are healed in relationship too.
And you say that the children develop better when they're in social.
Well, I think they develop in a way to be able to have more success with relationships, to contentment and happiness, to health later on in life. Like, we know that severe adverse childhood experiences, and there's a lot of studies on there's the ACEs studies, there's other studies on trauma that show us that trauma impacts the biology, how someone's body might grow, their brain, that children with a lot of adverse childhood experiences can end up with different health issues later in life, obesity, cardiac arrest, high blood pressure, and a lot of other illnesses, that it impacts our social abilities, it impacts our biology, it impacts all areas of our lives. And so we want to be able to help children who have experienced a lot of adverse childhood experiences kind of retrain their brains through lots of different modalities of therapy to do that, where they're able to experience an attunement with other human beings, primary caregivers, so they can go off and thrive in life and be successful and not have impairments, or, you know, like a lot of kids with adverse childhood experiences end up with substance abuse and substance use issues. So it's
wow.
Real quickly, impact.
TheraPlay. Is it TheraPlay?
TheraPlay is a model that was developed by Phyllis Booth, and it kind of it's a relational therapy, just like my dyadic developmental psychotherapy was developed by Dan Hughes, who worked in foster care and adoption for a long time. And I think that in the field for a long time, people treated trauma behaviorally, and as our field got became more a medical model, this idea of dealing with behaviors, and we deal with relationship, and TheraPlay is a really great model working with kids 0 to 5 and even older to work with developing an attachment. And there's a lot of other modalities
out there. And it's through play. That's through play, right?
Yeah, and attachment style activities. Okay. And we do play. I mean, I think play is a huge mental health intervention, just like I think nutrition and exercise and sleep. I think people don't think of those as mental health interventions, but they're huge mental health interventions for anxiety, for depression. And a lot of children with trauma and adverse childhood experiences, I think a lot of our children who are in the system are over-medicated. They're over-medicated as they go into residential homes, as they are in foster care, and they're misdiagnosed with having pathologies out of the DCM-5 and the ICD-10 that could and most likely are developmental traumas that can be repaired but aren't kind of like medical conditions like ADHD, which many children do have. And
But there aren't enough people like you out there. I mean, certainly you are one of a kind, but there aren't enough people like you potentially that have all this knowledge and support. Obviously, you have your team that you work with, and there are many people throughout the country that are trained. Sounds like we need more of those. And when we come back, actually, I'm curious, like, what we could do to support better this whole conversation and the children. When we come back with Padmini. Later on, we're going to have live music here in the studio with our musical guest, Joseph Peck. And in the next segment, our Ask Dorothy segment with our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Deborah Padmini Bergman. Before we get back to this fascinating conversation, I have to share that over the past 10 years, you've heard us interview some fascinating guests, like tonight, and introducing some, gosh, many, many great musicians, like tonight. During that time, many of you have let us know how much you have appreciated what we do, and some of you have shared with us how the show has impacted your lives. We should probably share some stories with people at some point. But happily, some of you have asked how you could help support the show, and we've never asked for anything. But now we're set up to do some very exciting things, and we are ready to accept your support. For the past several months, actually more like several years, we have been developing a new Life Changes show. We call it Life Changes Live. This new format is truly a show like you've never felt before. It's a mixed reality show. Now, mixed reality combines all of the elements of our radio show, But the new show introduces new segments and will be filmed in front of a live studio audience. One of the best parts is that the show will be shot in a 360 immersive virtual reality dome with visuals and soundscapes like you've never experienced before because the technology wasn't available, and will be streamed in virtual reality all over the world. Life Changes Live resurrects variety talk show formats like, you know, like the Johnny Carson show, but the technology will give it a futuristic twist that has never been possible until now. We invite you to be part of something truly groundbreaking on many levels, and we are asking for your support in making Life Changes Live a reality by going to our website at lifechangesshow.com and clicking on our Patreon link and becoming a patron. Co-create this show with us, break ground with us, and be part of something new, fun, and life-changing. And as a thank you, we have created some exclusive rewards for our listeners who become our patrons. Become a patron at the Patreon link at lifechangesshow.com. And as always, thank you for changing life for the better with us. Actually, speaking of, yes, Deborah Padmini, thank you for changing for the better for all of us. And for the children. And one of the things that I'm walking away from this conversation is, if there's one thing I can do, if I'm not able to adopt a child or foster a child, is support a parent who is, or a family who is.
Or children who never got a permanent family and now have aged out of the system and don't have the scaffolding and support that a lot of our 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds who still live at home and live at home while they go to college. Mm. So there are programs for foster youth called Guardian Scholars at a lot of the community colleges and colleges. So supporting with money, supporting with, you know, they need computers, they need advice, they need stuff to put in their apartments, they need guidance, they need mentors. So, you know, that transitional aged youth is, that's where we see a lot of kids. I think the statistics are 80% of all kids who age out of foster care end up as wards of the state again.
Oh, in an even worse way. Yeah,
they end up in our criminal justice system.
80%.
That's what it used to be. Wow. I don't know if that's the exact figure now. So I'd say, like, if, and then just with, like, kindness and empathy, you know, often children with challenging behaviors also get ostracized and marginalized, as do parents. A lot of adoptive parents of children with challenging behaviors, people don't understand. They don't understand how they're parenting. They don't understand what's going on with the child. There's a lot of judgment. And I would just say, you know, compassion.
Compassion. Kindness.
You know, kindness.
Smile.
Empathy. Yeah. You know, letting go of your judgment because we don't know what goes on, and we don't know everyone's story.
Yeah.
Being open that what you see might not be what you get, and that there might be another story there. Mm. So, and then talking about it and changing. There's still a stigma around adoption. Even my child, who I believe is proud of being adopted, and I couldn't be more proud to be an adoptive mother, and it's like, he's my kid.
Yeah.
And he has other parents and more family. We look at it as an add-on.
Nice.
Not a loss.
Nice.
It's a plus, yeah. Not a minus.
Wow.
But there's still pain and loss and grief to go through. But,
wow.
You know, to be able to maybe open their hearts to, even if it's just for a short amount of time or... But not everyone has the means or the resources or the lifestyle or the desire.
But everybody can be kind if they see somebody at a store or you know, at
or at the, there's a child in your school or your kid's school, or a child who doesn't regulate well or who has behaviors that are hard to understand or might even be, you know, offensive and repugnant, but to keep our minds open to understand that I don't believe they're bad kids. I think there's two kinds of kids, a regulated kid and a dysregulated kid.
Wow.
So okay. How can we connect? And how can we get out of these qualifiers? And how can we support schools so that they are more trauma-informed? Another statistic is that in L.A. County alone, when they did someone at the head of the Board of Education is doing studies on how, what's the percentage of traumatized kids in our classrooms? And I thought, oh, it's probably like 50 to 70%. Well, 95% of the kids in our classrooms have trauma.
Oh my gosh.
Just foster and adoption.
We're
right?
just scratching the surface
yeah,
here. Just
exactly.
scratching the surface.
We
but
are.
We are so grateful that you are doing what you're doing and you've come to share with us. And I look forward to more. And hopefully getting to see you more. Thank you so much, Padmini.
Thank you, Filippo.
Thank you.
I'm so touched that you even wanted to talk about this
Absolutely.
Subject and give it a platform.
It's because of you, and here we are. And with that, we move on to our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, my name is Jonathan, and I live in San Jose. After being unemployed for too many years, I now have a great job, and I love it. I work about 80-plus hours a week because I so enjoy what I am doing. Now that I don't have as much free time as I did in the past, some of my friends are telling me that I'm not a good friend anymore because I don't call them back immediately. My new job requires me to travel. It has become my priority because I believe in what I'm doing. I love my friends and just don't understand how they can be thinking that I'm no longer their friend, and because I now have a life that fulfills me. And it is not like I am ignoring them. It is simply that I am excited about doing the very best I can in my new position. I am simply focusing on my future and doing the best I can to get it all done while I have this amazing opportunity. If any of my friends have an urgent need to communicate with me, I make time for them. However, if it is just to chat, I can't always do this right away. So my question is, am I a bad friend like they are saying I am?
Dear Jonathan, thanks for this great question. I believe that friendships that are based on love, respect, empathy, compassion, acceptance, honesty, and loyalty will last forever. I intuit that in the past you had way too much time on your hands, and so you were constantly available anytime your friends had the time to chat. From the way you describe your new job, it appears that you are on the path to fulfilling your life's purpose. So you have to make you your priority. I believe that a true friend would be happy for you and thrilled that you're enjoying what you're doing. You might want to ask your friends why they appear to be angry with you when you're so happy in your new job. Jonathan, I feel like you're finally being a great friend to yourself and trust that you will continue to keep your priorities straight and not be distracted by people who define friendship as you being constantly available to them. Once I began totally focusing on my life's mission and purpose, I discovered that it was time for me to clear out some of the negative people in my life because they felt I was bad, and it didn't serve them or me to continue with their lack of respect for me and my lack of respect for myself by feeling bad about what they said to me. I thank the universe for showing me my true friends and for assisting me in finding new ones who are on the same page with me. Maybe it's time for you to do the same.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back here on the Life Changes Show with Joseph Peck.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com. The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Padmini. And joining us in the studio is a professional steel drum musician with a degree in music education, and he's a music educator. One of the things I love about this industry is that as we're growing, getting to know more people and doing more things, one can make a phone call like I did to our musical guest, Joseph Peck, and say, I would really love to have you as our musical guest on our show, and have him say, Filippo, I know you.
I know you as Socrates.
You know me as Socrates. Well, first of all, welcome Joseph back to the show.
Thanks, Filippo.
I think
great
you need to,
be to
explain
here.
That, actually. How do you know me as Socrates? A past life, maybe?
Yes. Well, it was actually, I just moved to Los Angeles from Wichita, Kansas, and I was, West Side Rentals. You go log on the computer. It's 2003. And the gentleman, Moni, was the lyricist of this rock opera called Visions.
Right.
And he was the guy who rented a room to me. And he was my roommate, along with a couple other people living in the house. And I came down to volunteer at the John Wright Theater in Hollywood. And if you remember, Paul Gleason.
Wow.
Who was the director of the show. He was in charge of the John Wright Theater.
Wow.
I volunteered helping them out with getting organized for the production, and they said, guys, we found our production manager. So lo and behold, I became a production manager without ever trying.
Uh-huh.
And you were a fantastic Socrates.
Thank you so much. Thank you for reminding me about that. I'd completely forgotten, and now things are going to come up because of that, including what Socrates says that I might need to know now. So thank you for bringing it back. But actually, speaking of bringing back or bringing forward, the steel drum, you've brought it forward in a different way. How did you learn about the steel drum and become interested in it?
Yeah, I went to Wichita State University in Wichita, Kansas to pursue a degree in music education. And within the first 3 months of being a freshman at the university, who's considered the creator or the father of the modern steel drum, Dr. Ellie Minette, came rolling through town with Kathy George in their van to tune the steel drums that the university had. They had a program there for percussionists to just pick up the drums and play, but it was not an actual credit class. And I think that's part of why I gravitated towards, hey, here's a really cool instrument, and I'm not having to take a credit course to learn how to study it. And shortly after that, a couple months later, Andy Norell, one of the foremost steel drummers in the world, came through town. And so that sort of cemented this relationship of meeting one of the best, in my opinion, pan players and the finest steel drum builder within my first couple months of college.
Well, you seem to have things happen when you move. So every time you move someplace else, something else seems to happen.
Exactly.
So interesting.
Yes. Like I moved just recently from Topanga to just Culver City West area, and you called to bring me on the show.
Seriously.
Seriously.
Oh, wow. And then 3 weeks ago, actually, somebody just passed.
Yeah, this was Dr. Ellie Minette. Minette, who, he's born in 1927 on the island of Trinidad in the West Indies. And he developed the first steel drum with a full scale on it. And by 1946, the 55-gallon barrel, which is the size of a drum that we play now, he created. And since then, there's been 10 instruments created in the steel drum family, Ellie creating 6 of those 10.
Wow.
So he's considered, he would say that he's not the inventor. We look at Winston Spree Simon being the 10 to 12-year-old boy at the time in the late 30s to put 2 notes on a biscuit tin.
And then Ellie, who also grew up with Winston, put a full scale and then the chromatic instrument.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to get to enjoy some of this music, actually something that you wrote. We're enjoying it not just with the steel drum, but your friends here. Would you like to introduce them?
Yes. I got Jason Lee Bruns on congas and percussion and Mark Sims on bass.
Well, welcome to you both. Welcome to you all, actually. This is, let me make sure, this is Beatnik Fishstick?
Absolutely.
Can we just leave it at that and just listen to what it is? Because I'm afraid.
It has to do with the ocean water and the smelling fish and living a beatnik lifestyle, you know, traveling in a van, touring.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't like you had a fish stick and it was bad and you were
sitting. No,
okay.
No.
All right.
None of that.
Here's Joseph Peck performing Beatnik Fishstick live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo. Joseph Peck with Jason Lee Bruns, and let's see, who else do we have? Mark Sims. Mark London Sims. that's excellent. If you want to learn more about Joseph Peck and his music and his touring and his educating kids, right? We'll talk about that in a second. JosephPeckGroup.com. And actually, do tell us about your educating of kids, because we were all drumming in the air while you were doing this.
Yes. So when I was still living in Wichita, I became a founding artist with a division of young audiences called Arts Partners. And so that got me into working in the schools and developing programs with teachers to bring the steel drum and the music of the Caribbean. When I came out to L.A., I connected with several different arts organizations. One of them is called the Music Center. I'm one of the Music Center's teaching artists. And I go into schools
during
the school year.
In downtown Los Angeles?
Downtown Los Angeles. Wow. They have an outreach program.
Nice.
As well as there's a program in Santa Clarita. There's L.A. Arts Group more of East L.A. And out of working with these organizations over the last handful of years, I created what's known now as the Caribbean Drum Circle.
Nice.
Summer comes, school's not in session, and I started to reach out and look around, hey, where can I take this program out into the community to be of service to families and children? And I discovered that libraries have these summer reading programs where they are bringing artists of all different types into the libraries to educate and entertain families, children, over the summer. So I have, this past summer, I did a Caribbean Drum Circle tour.
No wonder it was so hard to get you during the summer.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is a great example of what Padmini was talking about, how people can support, and you're doing it through music. Mm,
absolutely. And what's interesting is to get 30 kids in a circle with a drum and to get them to synchronize together.
Wow.
Where they have to bring their breath together. Wow. And I start with the breath. And then we start with body percussion.
Wow.
And then we move to a shaker. Then we pass out the drums. And by the time they get the drums in their hand, they're already synchronizing together.
Wow.
It's quite powerful and quite magical to see that many children come together and actually be in sync.
I'd love to see that. I'd love to be a part of that, actually. Let's all bring our kids, and let's go do that.
Let's do it.
We'll make it a Life Changes event. But actually, you're having one coming up, a Caribbean Drum Circle coming up?
Wednesday, I am going to be in Southgate. If you go to josephpeckgroup.com and you go to the events page, you'll see there's the event at a library in Southgate Wednesday afternoon this week.
As early as this week. All right. Well, we get to hear another piece, actually, a medley.
So, yes, a little medley. We're going to take it back to a more traditional. This is a Lord Kitchener mixed with a Shoro tune called a Nacharaza from South America. And we're going to spice it up with a fusion of a Caribbean-Brazilian mix.
Okay. Well, here is Joseph Peck performing along with Jason Lee Bruns and Mark London Sims. A medley, Marjorie and Anacharaza, live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joseph Peck. Joseph Peck Music or josephpeckgroup.com.
Yes, either or. Thank you, Filippo.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure to have you all. Hey, Mark, could I say it? This is the first time we've ever had steel drum on the Life Changes show.
Yes, you can.
And what a pleasure it was. Joseph, thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And thank you. I would just want to say a quick thank you to Jason. Thank you to Mark Sims, Jason Lee Bruns. Thanks, guys, for being here as well.
Absolutely. That's Mark London Sims, actually. Right? Joseph Peck. Thank you so much. JosephPeckGroup.com. And Deborah Padmini Bergman, thank you. Thank you. I'm proud of you. And look forward to more. We've experienced so much together. Who knows what's next?
Who knows?
Thank you, looking forward to it. Well, that's our show. Let's give a big thank you to Brent Hahn here at Studio NoHo for making us all sound so great. And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, our producer, Mark Legere, I am Filippo Voltaggio reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.